It is a central conceit of Arthur Schlesinger's Robert Kennedy and His Times. Theodore Sorensen, Tip O'Neill, and countless other liberals subscribe to this view. A popular play on Broadway, McBird, suggested that Johnson had murdered JFK in order to seize power. But even Robert F. Kennedy conceded in an oral history interview that his brother never seriously considered withdrawal and was committed to total victory in Vietnam. Kennedy was an aggressive anti-communist and Cold War hawk. He campaigned on a fictitious missile gap with the Soviets in a largely successful effort to move to Richard Nixon's right on foreign policy, tried to topple Castro at the Bay of Pigs, brought the world to the brink of nuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and got us deep into Vietnam. A mere 3.5 hours before Kennedy died, he was boasting to the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce that he had increased defense spending on a massive scale, including a 600% increase on counterinsurgency special forces in South Vietnam. The previous March, Kennedy had asked Congress to spend 50 cents of every federal dollar on defense. The Kennedy myth also veers sharply from reality when it comes to the issue of race. The flattering legend is that Kennedy was an unalloyed champion of civil rights. Supposedly, if he had lived, the racial turmoil of the 1960s could have been avoided. The truth is far more prosaic. Yes, Kennedy pushed for civil rights legislation, and he deserves credit for it. But he was hardly breaking with the past. In the supposedly reactionary 1950s, Republicans had carried most of the burden of fulfilling the American promise of equality to blacks. Eisenhower had pushed through 2 civil rights measures over strong opposition from Southern Democrats, and in particular, Senate Majority Leader Lyndon Johnson, who had fought hard to dilute the legislation. Again, Kennedy was on the right side of history, but his efforts were mostly reactive. "I did not lie awake worrying about the problems of Negroes," he confessed. There's considerable irony in the fact that in the first election to replace Kennedy, Barry Goldwater was roundly hailed as the fascist in the race. The bespectacled small government conservative in funereal suits was about as far from a fascist as one can get in American politics. Meanwhile, the intellectuals denouncing Goldwater as a crypto-Nazi failed to grasp that it was John F. Kennedy who was advancing fascist themes and aesthetics in American politics. FDR had been the first president to use modern technology to construct a mythological narrative about himself, but it was Kennedy who transformed that technique into an art. Camelot, a phrase never used to describe Kennedy's tenure when he was alive, has become a catch-all for every gauzy memory and unfulfilled wish of the Kennedy presidency. In 1964, James Reston summarized the newly minted liberal nostalgia for America's Greek god of a president. He was a storybook president, younger and more handsome than mortal politicians, remote even from his friends, graceful, almost elegant with poetry on his tongue, and a radiant young woman at his side.